Father, Son, and Holy Ghost.
Hello, friends. Welcome back to our Through the Bible podcast. This is Josh Swanson, lead pastor at Christ Church in Sierra Madre. So today is the day that you have been waiting for. I know many of you have just anxiously awaited this moment, and maybe you've been tracking along in the podcast so that we could finally get to this time, because today we are going to be starting the book of Leviticus. So I love Leviticus. I find it fascinating, and I think I like it so much because it's so strange and foreign and other. I know many might read it and think, oh, this feels so backwards and regressive. They're talking about sacrifices and all of this stuff. And didn't we leave that behind a long time ago? You know, there's very few topics that would be addressed in TED Talks, you know, in this book. And there's a lot of it that, you know, I think for many of us, we just think, you know, aren't there more urgent matters for us to talk about than, you know, the stuff here? You know, you've got entire chapters on bodily discharges and skin diseases and how to deal with, you know, fungus and mold in your house and, you know, whether or not you should wear fabric and clothing that is blended from two different kinds of, you know, yarn or whatever, and you know, lengthy chapters on how to butcher and properly arrange the body parts of an animal on a sacrificial altar, and then where to place the blood of said carefully arranged animal at the foot of the base of that altar. And so in many respects, we think, what on earth is this all about? But on the other hand, I just wanted to challenge that idea. And I want to suggest that this book actually is full of all kinds of relevant and intriguing and helpful direction for our own personal lives, for our social lives, how we order society. You know, this book, it contains stuff about caring for the poor and economics and social safety nets and how to cultivate a life of gratitude and joy, even when life is hard. It talks to us about how to make amends with your neighbor and with God, and how to deal with your own guilt and shame, and how to draw near to God and develop a deep spiritual life. And how is it that a religious and a national community can maintain its own unique identity and calling when the forces of conformity around us are so strong? You know, and these are very relevant issues, and Leviticus deals with this stuff. And so we are going to be spending the next few talks together in Leviticus. Now, let's begin with a little introduction. So just a few words about Leviticus. Number one, Leviticus is a sequel. You know, it is the sequel to Exodus, which of course was the sequel to Genesis. And in many respects, Leviticus picks up where Exodus left off. In fact, the very first phrase in Leviticus says this, "And the Lord called to Moses and said to him from the tent of meeting." And so it begins with God speaking from the tent of meeting. In fact, the title of Leviticus in the Hebrew is the Hebrew word Vayikra. Vayikra. It's a good word, you know. And it means, "And he called." And it's taken from this first phrase in verse 1, and they've named the book after that in Hebrew. And that phrase picks up where Exodus left off, because in Exodus, it says that the cloud covered the tent of meeting, and the glory of the Lord filled the tabernacle, and God was not able to enter the tent of meeting because the cloud settled on it. And then Leviticus begins, "And God spoke out of the tent of meeting to Moses." And so Leviticus begins where Exodus leaves off. And what was Exodus talking about anyway? Well, one of the core themes in Exodus dealt with the presence of God. Exodus began, in some sense, with the palpable absence of God. You remember, Israel was enslaved, oppressed, abused in Egypt, wondering that question that so many throughout the ages have wondered, where is God? And God seemed absent, and they were in this dark night of their souls and experiencing, you know, God's absence. But the book ends where? The book ends not with the absence of God, but with the palpable, experienced presence of God. The cloud of God descends, and they can see God's presence, as it were, in this cloud, and they can feel it, you know? And God is present with his people. And so Leviticus is now all about, how do you maintain a relationship with this God? How do you cultivate that relationship? How do you maintain relationships within the community? And if God is holy, then how do we cultivate a life of holiness? Which brings us to the second point about Leviticus. So number one, Leviticus is the sequel to Exodus. Number two, the theme of Leviticus is holiness. One of the key verses is Leviticus 21:8, which says, "And you shall be holy as the Lord your God is holy." And the book is divided into two main parts. Part one deals with a lot of ritual and ceremony and sacrifice and the priests and how to maintain personal holiness as it relates to bodily discharges and such like this. The second half, 17 through 25, involves what scholars have named the Holiness Code. And it deals with all kinds of issues ranging from land and animals and treatment of neighbor and care for the poor and social safety nets and sexual purity and all kinds of matters as it relates to holiness. And so this is a core theme in this book. Now, the way holiness is practiced in Exodus, of course, is very different culturally and ceremonially than the way those who are followers of Jesus are called to practice holiness. But nonetheless, you know, Peter repeats this command in Leviticus, from Leviticus, to God's people. And he again says, we need to be holy, set apart as God is holy. And so even though Leviticus is going to engage us in conversations about ritual and ceremony and purity laws and clean and unclean and all this stuff, and it's going to feel very different. And yet, what is very much at the heart of the Christian life is the practice of holiness. And so we can learn a lot about that practice of holiness from studying through the book of Leviticus. So number one, it's a sequel. Number two, its theme is holiness. It's how the book is divided apart. And then the third point, just by way of introduction, is that Leviticus contains a whole lot of ritual. And so we need to talk for a minute about ritual. I think, I stand in, an evangelical Protestant tradition that has look down in many ways upon ritual as something that is mere form and you don't really have the heart, involved. It's just ritual. But I just want to make a point here. So there's all kinds of ritual action in Leviticus. There is sacrificial rituals, and there are rituals regarding how animals are slaughtered, ritual regarding how the clothing people wear and the food they eat, and so on and so forth. And there's a lot of ritual action here. And so just a couple points on ritual. So first, rituals are intended in many respects to form people into being different kinds of people. You could say rituals, on the one hand, they signify something. You know, there's a lot of symbol in rituals. And for example, in this book, the symbols of fire and water and oil and blood all carry rich symbolic meaning. Blood symbolizes life, human and animal life. Water symbolizes purity. Oil symbolizes consecration or dedication, or I am set apart because of this oil. It's symbolic of dedication. And then what was the other one? I said oil. I was on a roll and I just lost it. Oil, water, blood, and what was the other? you remember because you just have been listening to this. But let's move on. But the point is that these are symbols that carry meaning. And so the symbol is intended to sign or point toward the meaning. But rituals don't just speak. They don't just point. They don't just signify. Rituals also do. They do something to us. One Jewish scholar named Jacob Milgram put it like this. He says, words fall from our lips like the dead leaves of autumn, but rituals endure with repetition. They are visual and participatory. They embed themselves in memory at a young age, and they are reinforced with each enactment. And so rituals form and mold and shape those who are participating into rituals into being different kinds of people. There's a very well-known scholar who has done a lot of work on ritual theory. Her name is Catherine Bell, but she put that famously like this. She said, kneeling does not merely communicate subordination to outside observers. So you think about the ritual kneeler, the person who goes into, you know, the church and kneels down on the little altar. And she says, kneeling doesn't merely communicate subordination to outside observers. For all intents and purposes, kneeling produces a subordinated kneeler in and through the act itself. And so rituals are intended to form and shape people who participate them into being different kinds of people. For example, and we're going to talk a little bit more about this next time, but I'll just bring this out. If you were in ancient Israel and you were to wrong your neighbor, and maybe you didn't even know it. Let's just say that you are a comedian and it's the Oscars and you tell a joke and maybe your intention was to make people laugh and you want to just kind of have fun, but you told a joke that made fun of a famous movie star named Will Smith's wife, Jada, and but your joke actually, you were doing something that was incredibly painful and hurtful to Jada because you were making fun of, you were making other people laugh at the expense of a disease she has. And that's just not funny. And of course, Jada's husband, Will, didn't find it funny either. He walks up on stage and slaps Chris Rock. And in some sense, the emotional pain that Jada felt was now been expressed in a physical pain that Chris Rock is feeling. But he may have said the joke not intending to cause the harm, but he caused the harm. And so all of a sudden it's discovered. It's like, oh my gosh, I completely hurt that person. I didn't mean to. And some of you have experienced this. And maybe your words or maybe your actions, something you said or did or you left undone, like maybe it caused damage. Maybe it caused damage to the office culture, to the person you live with, toward your parents, maybe toward your neighbors, you did something and there's just like, you caused hurt and pain. And in ancient Israel, you would go and offer a sin offering and you would put your hand on the head of that animal. And in some ways that guilt, that pain, that thing that you're feeling inside you, in some mystical sort of symbolic way, you were transferring that to that animal. And that animal is, it's killed. And you brought that animal and it cost you something because it was your animal. Now you've had, this is an agrarian, you know, farming society. Your wealth is measured in the kind of stuff you had. And so now, like, it's cost you something and you've watched the blood be shed. You've brought the animal. And this is a very thick ritual thing you're doing. And in many ways, you are experiencing at a ritual level the very thing that your harmful words did at an emotional level to your neighbor. And what making amends will require, it's going to cost you something. It hurts someone. It damages human life. And you see all of that played out symbolically before you, and you enact that in this practice. So do you see what I mean? That ritual does something. And can you imagine if you did that time after time after time, every time you hurt somebody, like think about how that might form you into the kind of person that doesn't hurt people as much as you used to because of the action you're engaged in. So rituals do. And so I think it's important as we engage in the text to begin to ask those questions. What are these rituals intended to do? What are they intended to sign? And how are they intended to shape and mold God's people into being a holy people that is set apart for God? So Leviticus is a sequel to Exodus. The theme of this book is holiness. You shall be holy, for the Lord your God is holy. It's divided into two halves. Chapters 1 through 16 are all about sacrifice and the priests and personal clean and uncleanness and ceremony. The second half, it's all about the purity codes, the holiness codes. And then this book is replete with ritual, and the rituals are intended to both say as well as do. And so we're going to dive a little bit more into this next time we get together, but this is our basic intro to Leviticus. And I look forward to jumping back in with you as we're actually going to dive into sacrifices next. And I was a little bit tempted to jump into it right now. In fact, you heard me jump into it a little bit now, but we are going to wait on that until we come together next time. We'll see you then.
Praise Father, Son.